anything communistic. In fact, it would kill communists in the name of the Lord. The school called the assignment propaganda, and critical parents described it as communist indoctrination. Alameda's in the Bay, broad-minded so-called, and they marched on the teacher, marched on his home. I'm cutting short some of it. Engel, who stands to lose his $18,500 teaching post, says that the controversy is nothing but McCarthyism and declares he has no regrets about having given the assignment. The project was designed by W. Barksdale and Larry Orloff, O-R-L-O-F-F, two teachers in San Francisco. We need to find these people who, like Roland Engel, R-O-L-A-N-D, Engel, A-N-G-L-E, who works for the Alameda High School, are members of the Radical Committee Against Racism. See, we can learn who to support by just reading the capitalist press. Italian industry suffers, says the New York Times. Signor Domenico Bartoli, D-O-M-E-N-I-C-O, capital B-A-R-T-O-L-I, director of the Florence newspapers La Nazione, N-A-Z-I-O-N-E, has dubbed Italy's present economic situation a counter-industrial revolution. Strikes, he declares, have become a habit in which a single worker may arbitrarily decide to prevent goods from leaving a factory. Supported by their communist subverted unions, that's typical of capitalist press again, remember the Times, Italy's workers have succeeded in pushing to bankruptcy the factories responsible for their country's post-war miracle. Yeah, post-war miracle, my ass. The oppression of the working class. Today there are over 1.5 million unemployed in Italy, while the men whose impossible demands and non-productivity brought their companies to ruin now work at night in small family enterprises, which being undeclared are subject to no taxes. See, the capitalist press doesn't like the little man to get any share of the pie, to have little businesses that might make him enough money to feed his family. You can see so much in the capitalist press, how they are the willing arm that comes out to crush down any resistance, how they set us up by lying on us and smearing us so the people would be turned off to us and the government would have a better room to come in and crash us or whip up such hate that someone would assassinate us. But they did not get it achieved, and we're still here a year later, standing bravely and more united. Meanwhile, the government was expanded rapidly as thousands of new municipal and national agencies sprang up, and tens of thousands of government employees who produce nothing are now working only 4 hours a day. The New York Times, of course, is greatly, greatly concerned about that. Chicago Tribune, capitalist press all. For hundreds of years, the real world has subscribed to the theory that gold is not held as an investment, but as a protection against disaster. Gold demonetizes the dollar. Now this theory has been adopted by the Arabs, and as gold takes over the monetary functions of the dollar, the figures make interesting reading. According to the London gold firm of Samuel Montague and Company, 370 tons of gold passed into the Middle East in 1977 into the Arabs' control. Remember, Zionist influence is also highly felt in the media and the press. The three oil countries of Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait together imported as much gold as the International Monetary Fund sold at its four auctions last year, 70, 90, and 35 tons respectively. European countries imported 570 tons of gold, 220 of which went to Italy, where Italians, hedging against inevitable communist revolution, oh, even they admit it's going to be inevitable that communists are going to take over Italy. Salutations to the Red Brigade. The capitalist press does slip in something there now and then. 220 tons of the gold which went to Italy, where Italians, hedging against inevitable communist revolution, that means absolutely the communist revolution will take place in Italy, stashed part of its gold in strong boxes. The rest was used for jewelry, most of which was bought up by Arabs who may soon demand payment for their oil in gold instead of Carter's dollars, who are beginning to be distrusted in the world market. Of the 1,221 tons of gold sold for industrial purposes last year, 1,006 tons went to the jewelry trade alone. Of the 1,450 tons of gold on offer, 700 tons came from South Africa, 250 tons from the Western world, 300 tons from the Soviet bloc, and 200 from the International Monetary Fund. Once industrial and jewelry demands were met, 208 tons remain open for speculators. The amount of gold on offer in 1978 was not expected to exceed last year's figure, although the USA could change that by dumping gold on the market to make our trade deficit look better, and they did. Even this element of uncertainty is counterbalanced by the January 1978 expiration of the agreement barring Switzerland and the central banks of the Group of Ten from buying gold on the open market. This happened. USA had to dump part of its gold, and gold is the only backbone of its dollar, and it's having to sell off its gold to hold up its staggering dollar. The dollar is falling so bad and unemployment is rising so terribly that now 40% of the black community is virtually in sub-starvation, in poverty, and unemployment. You know, you look at the ebony and you see a picture of some black person that's made it, some Uncle Tom, to try to placate the blacks, or some sellout black preacher like Ike, give the appearance that black people can make it. That shows how little consciousness there are, that there is no consciousness of liberation in the USA, or Ike long ago would be dead. Murderous milker of the people's money. He put $22 million in Mexico, and when devaluation came, he lost $10 million of it right on the spot. And he just had the nerve to cry about it in the press. $22 million that he invested in Mexico, not church money, his own personal wealth. And the fact that robber barons like that in our black community, Uncle Toms, get by without ever being shot, shows you how little concern, how little black consciousness even there is, not to say Marxist-Leninist consciousness, and how right we were to get out of there before they sweep up people in concentration camps for genocide and nuclear war comes. Well, that's the way it is. Another thing on gold, New York Times. For years, America's bankers, investment houses, and federal governments have been trying to sell Americans the idea that gold is good only for making jewelry and crowning teeth, a hard thesis to put over when nine-tenths of the world has confidence in no other monetary standard. But the push to demonetize gold continued, and if the recent collapse of the dollar on the world market does not teach Washington its folly, nothing will. These capitalists are getting nervous. Even the New York Times doesn't believe in the dollar anymore. That's good news. The flurry of apprehension that hit the bourses of Europe as Carter let the dollar slide proved again the old truism that gold is the classic crisis metal to which investors turn when threatened by inflation, war, or an unstable foreign exchange market. And we must admit, as U.S. businessmen said the New York Times business section, that that's what's happening. We are threatened by inflation, nuclear war, and unstable foreign exchange market. I guess they're going to buy some gold and bury it and hope that they can survive. They won't survive, but the gold might. On May 1st, gold soared to $181.95 per fine ounce at the 19th auction of the International Monetary Fund, IMF. The month of March was subsequently the most turbulent on the gold market since December of 1974. The rise was due to the fall of the dollar, as demand for gold goes up when the dollar goes down, and the dollar goes down every day. And since gold is still quoted in dollars at the great trading centers of Zurich, London, Hong Kong, and New York, the price increase really meant that gold was maintaining its value while the money against which it is measuring, the U.S. dollar, is constantly falling. Well, this gives you a little bit of the ideas of what's happening in the news. And I'm giving you a capitalist perspective so you can see how they're thinking. Another little blurb out of a capitalist press in Memphis, Tennessee. Thoughtful Panamanians are appalled at the blackmail exercised by Torrijos, general who leads Panama, in pushing for the Panama Canal treaties, notes Congressman Lawrence P. McDonald, Democrat, Georgia. They fear and oppose the treaties, and they realize, says the congressman, that the treaties are politically unpalatable to most Americans. They also know that their passage probably cements a left-wing dictator in power for the rest of his life. Torrijos is to the left of center. See how openly vicious the capitalist press is. Senor Alexis Watson Castillo, a defector from Panama, has said it is unbelievable to me that a country as large and powerful as the United States could be blackmailed by Torrijos. Always is a sellout. There always is an Uncle Tom. In his view, noted the Washington Weekly for May 16, 1978, the already powerful communist influence in Panama will become total once the treaties are ratified and Torrijos will arrange for the Soviet Union to replace U.S. subsidies and technicians required to operate the canal. When this happens, all hope for political freedom in Panama will disappear and de facto control of the canal will be in the hands of Castro and the USSR. Now remember, that's the U.S. capitalist press. Panama hardly even got a decent treaty out of it. Sure, Torrijos, the leader of Panama, spelled T-O-R-R-I-J-O-S, is left of center, distrustful of U.S. capitalism, and did pull a crazy nigger tactic and said he would die, and his army would die, and the people would die if they didn't sign the Panamanian Treaty, because they were going to invade the Panama Canal the next morning, and it passed. But it doesn't even give them control of the Panama Canal until the year 1999. Stupid capitalist press, they can't even give people the dignity of looking down the road 25 years for freedom. A story from Merseyside in London tells of the new confessional system of a local priest, allowing hard of hearing parishioners to write down their sins and pass them on to their confessor to avoid the embarrassment of having to shout for all to hear. On one occasion, however, the priest reported that he was passed a note which read, 1 pound of tea, 1/2 pound of sugar, and 1 pound of margarine. Told of the mistake, the sinner was heard to cry out, good heavens, I've given my sins to Tesco's. Just a little lighter side of the news. Lighter side of the news, indeed. Passing of the Panamanian Canal, even in 1999, is certainly scaring the U.S. press. They're talking about the Marxist takeover and third world control. New York Times says, not the return. Reply to straight-faced businessmen in on the plot to relinquish the canal to Panama's tin-pot Marxist dictator. You see, he said, we never had it. This is the argument. This is the whole essence of the thing. It is a full, clear recognition of the fact that sovereignty is in the hands of Panama. The businessman concluded by describing the unelected Torrijos, a pal of Castro, as a wonderful fellow. He believes in human dignity and respect of the individual. We shall see, said this capitalist blurb out of the New York Post again, that dreaded Murdoch who started the attack on us. Another blurb in his paper says, when a president says never, that may be just about the time he's going to do it. The editors of the Richmond News Leader believe President Franklin Roosevelt said he never would send American boys into any foreign wars. President Richard Nixon said he never would resign. And President Carter is saying he never will impose wage price controls. Beware, said the New York Post, there will be wage and price controls. A $6 million contract has been awarded by the Syrian government to C.H. Bob, B.A.B.B. Company, a Massachusetts firm skilled in manufacturing equipment that bakes traditional Middle Eastern bread. The Arab countries soon will enjoy the benefits of machines which provide 166 loaves of Syrian pocket-style bread a minute, 3 times faster than traditional methods in Arab Syria. There you see Zionism again. I guess the Syrians are not even supposed to be entitled to make bread on a mass productive basis. Of course, Syria is a strong and close supporter of the Soviet Union, and that bothers them greatly, that Syria could get any kind of, could buy anything from USA. But USA is in such bad state that they have to sell to whoever could buy their technology these days, and they have no principle. Capitalists have no morality. They'd sell their own mother. Well, this has given you an idea of the news, and I hope that you will digest it, think about it, organize it in your thinking, because we need to be thinkers. Without knowledge, we have nothing but animalism, total disloyalty to everything living. We have no sensitivity. We have no principle. It takes knowledge to bring us to communism, Marxist-Leninism, and the revolutionary applications in fact of it, as we see in this beautiful cooperative, which we should kiss the dirt every day and be thankful for our children. The miracles that never cease, the protections that always are on the increase, 30 miles around our land, the beauty of it, the beauty of it all, the breathtaking beauty of it all, enough to eat, shelter, warmth, not having to worry about cold as tens of thousands froze to death in USA because of oil shortages and manipulations of the big corporations that turned off gas on the poor and oil on the poor. Never get too cold. Certainly it's never too hot. That's something. Older people have to have 67 degree temperature to live. You never guaranteed that, not even in California. Here, that's why they're guaranteed good health. It's best to be in a warmer climate where you sweat out the impurities from your system, where the food is free of the chemical contaminants that cause cancer, where there's no filthy smog, no dirty air that causes cancer, lung problems, and all other kinds of bodily ailments, kidney, heart failure, and high blood pressure. Think of it, with over 100 people that had high blood pressure, now only just a bare handful have any trace of high blood pressure. Even diabetes has disappeared. Many were on insulin, no longer use it. We're not grateful enough for the housing, the recreation, the entertainment, the central supply that guarantees equality, and the medicines. I had to pay $56,000 for medicines this week. Be grateful. And I do demand that by tonight, everyone turn in a way of making money and saving it and do your own project. I'm tired of appealing now. I want it brought in. Some of your tests still show an appalling lack, but many did very excellent performances, and we will reward you accordingly. Down the road, you will be getting special awards that pursue educational knowledge, because it takes knowledge to be sensitive and to bring about revolution. Thank you, and all of my love. Step up your production so you are not brought up for the new brigade tonight, because we are observing some that are not producing as they ought to be producing. I love you very much. Attention. We always keep you informed of all news, good or bad. This is good news. We have avoided any kind of alarm to you as a community, because I felt that I could handle this situation. The publisher's wife, Hunter, is a part of the conspiracy. Though I had helped her through the years, visited her, many of my staff and myself had listened to her hours and hours in her drunken stupor. She's a woman near death. Paralysis. A very hardened woman who now is seeking every dime she can get to sustain her. She's become a very evil mechanic robot of the conspiracy that started with Kleinman the Nazi and Kahn the Nazi, connected with the Treasury Department in the earliest days with San Francisco and Los Angeles police, and then built up to the horrifying degree that it now is. She was sent by the PD, Press Democrat Santa Rosa, and also money backing, slim indeed, because she had to help us, ask us for some help. It's a shame what little money people will sell their conscience out. But she underestimated this little country. She came under false pretenses, not telling that she was coming to do a story to try to smear us. And today, the Home Ministry, Ministry of Immigration, Home Affairs, our good friend Dr. Mingo, has ordered her being expelled from a country. That's quite serious type of approach to these matters for a small country, though rich in resources, to take on Yankee imperialism by the order of expulsion of a USA citizen. But if she is not out of the country by tomorrow, under the present circumstances, Dr. Mingo has ordered her arrest. She thought her honky pride and connections with right-wing circles in the Caribbean and the fascist backing of oil interests and undoubtedly the CIA, Senator Stennis and all of his mass murderers, lynch mob rulers, she thought she could make it in to our project and stay and harass as long as she chose. But Dr. Mingo and the government of Guyana, the Socialist Republic of Guyana, at least consider us in somewhat good standing, as she was ordered to be expelled and removed by tomorrow. She must leave this country, even though she had originally a 30-day visa and has only been here 3 days. I think you can take heart from that kind of support. I asked the radio room to be sure to tell the people in Georgetown, because a country can have international shock waves when the Soviet Union, as large as it is, expelled a reporter from its country. There were shock waves all around the capitalist world about denial of human rights and all of these other things. But the Soviet Union stood by their guns also, of course. But the woman came in as a liar. She's been pulling all kinds of intrigue, even though I helped her grandchild when it was about to die, and helped her daughter-in-law, her son, to pay their hospital bill. As Mary Cheddar can tell you, and other nurses, they didn't have a dime, and I had to take care of them. There's no way we can help but have a committee of the defense of the revolution and look at every person. We all should be critical and analytical of everyone. After seeing the person that was lost in the forest the other day, it is your duty to report any negative thing you hear, or you will be held absolutely responsible. It is your duty to see any strange behavior and negative talk from anyone. Leadership, top leadership, makes no difference, and all echelons of this equalitarian society. Panama Canal defeat. The narrow passage, says Radio Cuba, now you're getting a Cuban perspective, of the second Panama Canal treaty was a victory for Jimmy Carter and his right-wing fascist elements of Congress that made all kinds of unscrupulous deals with the right wing, the far right fascist wing, to win its passage. Carter unabashedly expressed the true intent of the second treaty. We have a clear right to do what is necessary to defend our canal, quote unquote. Imagine claiming that property of a foreign country belongs to the United States. Senate Democratic leader Robert Byrd of West Virginia, one of the staunchest supporters of the treaty, called the vote one of the Senate's finest moments. But all sorts of compromises had to be made with Senator Byrd because of his racist demands, and demands that there be no more opportunities, legislative opportunities, given to blacks, Indians, and poor minorities. In securing passage of both Panama Canal treaties, the one passed last month allegedly guarantees the neutrality of the canal zone. Carter used strong-arm tactics and other dubious methods to get the votes he needed. Following the approval of the first treaty, one high administration official was quoted as saying, "I hope the Panamanians will get as much out of these treaties as some United States senators did. In one case, this was stated by one in the administration itself. In one case, the White House reversed itself last month, said Radio Free Cuba. They were quoting a U.S. press, by the way, when they said that U.S. senators were picking up money and powerful influence from going along with Carter on the passage of the Panamanian Treaty. In one case, the White House reversed itself last month and supported a plan whereby the government would buy $250 million worth of copper for the country's strategic stockpile to keep down poor nations. Carter sold out on this one to Arizona Senator Dennis DeConcina, whose state is a major copper producer. DeConcina became the center of controversy during Senate debate on the Second Canal Treaty when he sponsored the amendment allowing the United States to intervene militarily at any time it chooses to keep the canal open. We need no copper, by the way. That costs the taxpayers, USA, $250 million because we already have a very great stockpile, enough to sell out into the world market sufficient copper to lower the prices of Bolivian copper and to lower the prices of Zambian copper so that they would have their economy broken, but it did not succeed. Zambia told Carter yesterday evening they will continue to sponsor the Cuban and Soviet presence in Africa as their only hope, the only champions of liberation that they have outside their own people. The Panamanians are not at all pleased with either of the treaties, both of which allow continued U.S. fascist neocolonialism in the Canal Zone. Indeed, it was this mass opposition to both treaties that forced Panamanian head of state, leftist General Omar Torrijos, to declare that his army would have intervened in the Canal Zone to start our fight for liberation, even if it means our death if the second treaty had not passed. There is little doubt of the certain U.S. retaliation. If Torrijos had carried out his plan, they would have annihilated not only he, his army, but the people of Panama. There is also little doubt that the Panamanian people will not stand much longer being subjected to U.S. fascist domination. 22 Attica brothers shot down by New York City cops. 22 former defendants in the 1971 Attica prison rebellion were shot and one was killed immediately, three died later, by two New York City policemen with submachine guns earlier this week. Mariano Gonzalez, who was known at Attica and in the defense movement as Dalu, was shot to death. Cleveland Davis, who was also called Jomo Eric Thompson, is near death and has been charged with murder and conspiracy. Both police officers, Norman Cerullo and Christy Masson, were killed. Good. Police accounts of the shooting, which they claim to have reconstructed from witnesses, are extremely suspicious. The struggle allegedly began when Officer Moscone, while sitting in a patrol car, brushed Dalu's coat and felt a gun inside. Dalu had been standing on the sidewalk with many of his brothers. When Moscone got out of the car and ordered Dalu to put his hands up for a search, Dalu allegedly grabbed him and Jomo opened fire on Moscone and Cerullo. Police say that this account was given by the witness in a fifth-story apartment. Very likely that anyone could see what was going on in a fifth-story apartment. The New York Times quoted one of Moscone's fellow police as praising him as an officer who pulled people off the streets for searches simply on suspicion that they looked wrong. Although remaining charges against Attica defendants were dropped 15 months ago under a pardon by New York City New York Governor Kerry, Dalu was still considered. They were not going to give them up. They make these pretenses of human rights, but then the police or the FBI or the CIA wait to gun them down. They were considered fugitives ever since their pardon. pardon was announced. At the same time, Kerry said there would be no discipline or charges brought against state troopers or guards for the murder of over 40 Attica prisoners. At the time of the shooting, Jomo was on parole from an earlier conviction. Police say he would have been sent to jail immediately upon arrest. A lawyer who worked in the Attica defense movement has indicated to Workers' Power that there has been a pattern of harassment and extra close surveillance of parolees from the Attica Rebellion. They had to let them off because the state used outright fascist tactics to not only murder Attica prisoners, but many of its own police force, and they didn't want any more notoriety in the news showing how ugly and fascistic the New York governor, Rockefeller, and his cohorts and his state police and prison police were. The police and the establishment, white press, have seized upon this incident to unleash a flood of vicious, racist, and reactionary fascist propaganda. They have spread slanderous accusations about the 22 and their families. 7 men were convicted of relatively minor crimes, 6 of them through plea bargaining, due to the fact that they had no lawyers, because lawyers only are available to the rich in U.S. society, not to the black, Indian, or the poor whites. One of these was Jomo, who was shot 7 times at Attica. Jomo began presenting evidence in court of the murderous fascist atrocities committed by state officials, which had never had been investigated. This evidence so threatened the Attica prosecution that they were willing to drop their trumped-up murder charges and made a plea deal carrying no additional prison time, and arranged with the police to have them shot down like dogs later. The Attica Rebellion of September 1971 was the culmination of years of unrest and protest of the fascist torturous condition in the prisons of New York State and the entire country of USA. It was recognized throughout the world as a disciplined, justified, and fully necessary act of revolutionary rebellion against intolerable fascist conditions inside and outside U.S. prisons. A little bit of the news that we hope that will give you some insights in what is happening to our brothers and sisters in USA. Behind everything that looks like a possible breakthrough, we always see that there is something going on. Blacks sentenced in South Africa. Pretoria, South Africa's Supreme Court, recently sentenced 66 black men to 7 to 18 years in prison on trumped-up charges under the Terrorism Act, the repressive fascist law in the apartheid regime of South Africa, in which Pretoria is the capital, and South Africa is fully financed and backed by U.S. monopoly capitalism. The repressive fascist law, adopted in May 1967, says that anyone can be arrested, imprisoned, and sentenced without trial, no jury trial, no judge trial, for endangering law and order or plotting to overthrow the government with violence if it is considered to be the case in the minds of the police. The mind of a racist policeman can convict and sentence someone to prison for 18 years, just like the above, without a trial. This is an example and model of what USA will do in its own country as the fighting gets tougher. People arrested under this act receive the maximum penalty of death or at least 5 years in prison. A similar law already is being practiced in Washington, D.C., or at least 5 years in prison. It is reported that in 5 months of late 1977, over 6,000 black South Africans, many of them students, were killed by this fascist regime that is supported entirely by U.S. monopoly corporations and the fascist government of USA. Over 1,700 people arrested and imprisoned without trial. 1,600 people deprived of the freedom of movement entirely. Bank loans ruling. A congressional panel voted last week to make loans to South Africa by the U.S. Export-Import Bank Group based on progress by the white fascist rule country towards black majority rule, Ha ha, what a joke that is. The House of Representatives Subcommittee on International Trade approved the amendment. Imagine that in the light of the news I just gave you above. This, which will bar South Africa from receiving loans unless the United States President Carter determines that it is making significant moves towards black rule and maintains its close alliance with U.S. monopoly capitalism. The bill also raises the bank's lending authorization from $25 billion to $40 billion to uphold the fascist regime that is rocking and reeling from revolution by the great black solidarity and Indian solidarity that we see in South Africa. The South African government made a last-ditch effort last week to persuade the black people of Soweto, a township, S-O-W-E-T-O, a brave township that has fought over and again, like the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto against the Nazis, to vote in a mock elections for vacancies on the community council. The 30-member council has no executive powers. It's just a front to appear the blacks have some self-rule, and it was predicted by prominent black newspaper editor Percy Kwabuzo that less than 2% of the township's population would turn out, and indeed it was true. 1.6% turned out. In elections held earlier in February, many candidates were disqualified. This is some of the news. Ugandan officials corrupt. Ugandan President Idi Amin, who used to be bravely nationalistic and independent of USA dictates, last week blasted some of his cabinet ministers for cheating the public and said he will soon announce a major government reshuffle. The Ugandan leader accused the officials of considering themselves supernatural, supermen and big heads above the law, and open collusion with USA monopoly capitalist interest. In spite of his wooing up, trying to kiss up the USA, they were still trying to do him in. Perhaps he'll take a turn now back to the proper stance that he always did, brave independence. He gave this speech during an address to ministers and other leading government officials. Idi Amin in Uganda, look these up on your map, was particularly critical of Finance Minister Brigadier Moses Ali when he accused of cornering the market in the sale and distribution of U.S. new automobiles. Ali Amin said would no longer have these powers. Let us hope that he looks into the full extent of the conspiracy to have him destroyed, because they do not trust him. Angolan President Agostinho Neto was reported to be desperately ill with leukemia in a Moscow hospital. Russian doctors have asked for a newly developed drug to treat him, the Sunday Telegram here reported. Soviet embassy officials approached specialists to request supplies of the medication developed by cancer researchers, Dr. Kurt Hilheim, a specialist in the hospital there. He will advise the therapy for the leader of the Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPLA. In spite of President Agostinho Neto's illness, the Angolan revolution continues, and they are backing up strongly the freedom liberation efforts of the Katanganese that they have given refugees asylum to, and are now, these brave Katanganese are fighting in Zaire to regain their province, which was formerly known as Katanga. This gives you a little bit of news, and we hope that you may be able to digest it. Victoria Road blacks forced to move. The future of the predominantly Victoria Road, a tenement section in the black community for poor and minority residents in Oakland, and business owners of the Victoria Road community here remains uncertain following last Tuesday's city council vote to redevelop the deteriorating two-square block area in downtown Oakland and put many more blacks out of a place of residence. The city has reassured residents and proprietors in this area, bounded by Broadway, 8th, Washington, and 10th Street, that they will be given some financial and other assistance in moving. However, black caucus leaders doubt that a penny will be given to help the minorities. However, numerous people on Victoria Row, named after the architectural style that predominates the community, are fearful that they will literally be left out in the cold once reconstruction begins. The criminal code overhaul, Senate Bill 1, which is now Senate Bill 1437, and House Bill H.R. 6869, is hopeful that it might be killed in the House and might have succeeded. But Senator Edward Kennedy put his reputation on the line by pushing hard for enactment of the bill during this session of Congress. Can you imagine the contradictions? A man who's lost two of his brothers, I guess out of fear, the monopoly capitalists and the CIA and the FBI have him so fearful that he's becoming a real little puppet for fascism. Kennedy, the lead Senate sponsor of the measure, along with Senator James Eastland, who has openly suggested lynch mobbing of black people of Mississippi, has been meeting with the chairman and membership of the House subcommittee, which is currently holding hearings on the bill. Well, what can you expect? People just don't have any soul, no gut. I think he would rather die. I would think Senator Edward Kennedy would rather die than associate and collaborate with the enemies of his brothers who murdered President Kennedy and Senator Bob Kennedy. But what some people will do to save their miserable life when our body's only worth 98% of chemicals. It's really, really frightening what will happen. Brace yourself for return to the Red Scare, witch hunt era promoted in the 1950s by late Wisconsin fascist Senator Joseph McCarthy. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, claiming that the current epidemic of terrorism in Europe, and particularly evidenced by the Red Brigade in Europe, will spread to the United States, and is preparing a massive anti-terrorist program. The kidnapping of former Italian Premier Aldo Moro by the Red Brigade, and his execution by the people, and similar recent incidents in Europe and Latin America have brought on a strong feeling of uneasiness in fascist U.S. government circles in this country. Jimmy Carter no doubt has frequent nightmares of being snatched off the streets one day by unfriendly abductors. The prevailing fear in the USA, ruling monopoly capitalist circles, is that foreign dissidents seeking the armed overthrow of the United States will infiltrate the country and are doing so now. Just a scare to try to bring excuse to set up a police state. While it is certainly true that there are many revolutionary and progressive organizations abroad that seek the demise and overthrow of American capitalism, there is a large and growing group of potential terrorists, guerrilla activists here at home. There are the millions of black men, women, and children living in stark poverty. Over 40% of the black population, 40 out of 100 in USA, are living in stark poverty because of this government, fascist U.S. government's nearly four centuries of cruel, genocidal, racist neglect. There is a rapidly growing Spanish-speaking population whose unemployment problems, experts say, have become more of a crisis than even those experienced by blacks, and they have broken out in absolute revolution in Houston four times, killing some 17 police. Houston is really rocking and reeling from the resistance of the Spanish-speaking, the Chicano population. There is a dwindling Native American population, the Indians, that are practically being massed out by genocide. The first Americans who now face an onslaught of federal legislation designed to strip them of their human dignity and right to self-determination by breaking every treaty that the United States government ever made with any Indian or Indian tribe. In the white community, there are the coal miners, farmers, and other workers weary of receiving chump change for being the backbone of the fascist American economy. These disgruntled poor and oppressed Americans are the ones who bear watching in this country, not the Red Brigade or the Japanese Red Army, the forces that will inevitably seize power for the people of the United States live right around the corner from the White House, said an editorial of the Black Panther spokesperson who's now putting out a little sheet because their major paper was curtailed by the terrible conspiracy against them. And thus is true, although this is still dreamy-eyed nonsense, because when blacks will not speak up strongly and demand the release of the Wilmington 10, when blacks will not speak up when their own leaders are discredited, framed like Congressman Diggs facing a 175-year penitentiary sentence in USA, when they're so apathetic not to speak up, no consciousness, you can't depend upon anything. It has been brought to light that the FBI has used Howard University, the largest black university, to discredit all black liberation efforts. The Federal Bureau of Investigation used Howard University in numerous instances, too many to count, during their campaign to discredit all black leadership in the 70s. Declassified files in the federal government's notorious counterintelligence program known as COINTELPRO revealed. The files made public under the Freedom of Information Act disclosed that the FBI attempted to exploit rifts between Howard students and the Black Panthers and other black liberation groups. The Howard University Hilltop reports the rift stemmed from problems caused by the party's 1970 Revolutionary People's Party Constitutional Convention held in Washington that seemed threatening to the ruling class and particularly the monopolists who rule all the capitalist nations, the Trilateral Commission. Well, this has given you a little bit more of news that might be of interest to you. We hope that it will. Disabled congressmen, 18 members, white, of course, of U.S. Congress, are currently receiving monthly checks for so-called disabilities. These 18 other congressmen, there are another 18 more, 36 in total, receive a monthly military pension check or Veterans Administration payment in addition to their $57,500 salary a year. Their travel allowances and other benefits, the payments range from $41 to over $1,809 a month that they get from welfare. My, congressmen on welfare. With their travel allowances, Congress now has to be bought out at the tune of over $100,000. Yet, no matter how much they sell out when they leave office, they're used as scapegoats to try to give the appearance of human rights, as two white congressmen have been charged for receiving kickbacks from the South Korean fascist government through the KCIA. You can't stay in Congress forever, after all. Congressman Diggs tried to go along, black congressman, leader of the Subcommittee on African Affairs, founder of the Black Caucus, but he faces 37 felon counts and 175 years in prison. The nature of the attack on the popular Michigan black congressman, who is a senior black member of Congress, is reminiscent of the witch hunt launched against the late Harlem congressman Adam Clayton Powell that denied him his office twice. According to U.S. law, there can be no taxation without representation. Yet Harlem was denied its right to the congressman it elected by over 70% majority vote.